And away we go here on episode 5 of the Four Verticals podcast. I'm your host, Harrison Graham. Lots to get into tonight. Holy smokes. Bombshell of a day is Urban Meyer's fate has been determined. We will get into that in just a couple of minutes. Later in the show, I want to preview the Texas Longhorns and the West Virginia Mountaineers as we get closer to the regular season, as we continue our Big 12 preview series. I'll save TCU, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma for the final podcast. But news of the day, not just in college football, but in all of sports and really in all of news, is Urban Meyer. The situation has come to an end for the most part as Ohio State deliberated for over almost 12 hours today and had a press conference at about 8 o'clock earlier this evening. Several people talked. The lead investigator from the situation committee, Mary Jo White, she had her remarks. Gene Smith, the AD, talked. Ohio State's president talked. And Urban Meyer read a statement before they all took some questions. I want to give some cliff notes on the ultimatum, and that is that both Urban Meyer and athletic director Gene Smith have been suspended for 3 games. So Meyer will not be coaching against Oregon State on September 1st. Rutgers the next week and TCU September 15th. After the Oregon State game, however, though, on September 2nd, he can rejoin the team that following week. I guess it'll be the 3rd because teams get the Sunday off. September 3rd, he can rejoin the team and guide practices and strategies. He just won't be able to be on the sidelines for Saturdays for the following 2 games as well. So he misses 3 games and really just the practices leading up to the opener before he can rejoin the team for practices. Then he can rejoin the team fully after their game with TCU. Have lots of thoughts on that decision. Gene Smith, he'll be suspended from August 31st through September 16th as well, again through the TCU game. I'm going to get into my thoughts on the situation later. I want to kind of go through the press conference and some of the details and what we heard from Mary Jo White and Urban Meyer. I'm going to focus mostly on Urban Meyer. Gene Smith, to me, isn't the story here. Urban Meyer is, and I'll get into why here in just a couple of minutes. Mary Jo White, the lead investigator for this situation, she spoke for about 5-6 minutes, discussed the details of the investigation. They went through 60,000 emails, over 10,000 texts, 40-plus interviews, compiled a extensive research and details before they made their ultimate decision on suspending Urban Meyer and Gene Smith for the 3 games, as I previously mentioned. Lots of boring stuff at first, but then it really started to take off. And I want to start here. Listen to this from Mary Jo White as she discusses some of the details on what Urban Meyer may have known and what he didn't know. Listen to this cut.
Coach Meyer was in fact aware of the 2015 law enforcement investigation into allegations of domestic violence by Zach Smith. He was informed of that investigation by Athletic Director Gene Smith in the fall of 2015. And both Coach Meyer and Athletic Director Gene Smith regularly monitored the progress of that investigation for a period of months.
And despite that knowledge,
Coach Meyer and AD Gene Smith, although acting in good faith, did not report the investigation of Zach Smith for domestic violence in 2015 to compliance, as we believe they should have. Although law enforcement had not brought charges at the time that Coach Meyer and AD Smith became aware of the investigation, the compliance function would have been in the best position to assess whether to conduct an internal investigation into the allegations had they known about them.
So in their findings, this committee and lead investigator Mary Jo White just told us that both Urban Meyer and Gene Smith did know about the 2015 incident and even tracked the legal situation for months. Well, that's quite a story considering what Urban Meyer said at Media Days, throwing the attention at the media, saying, you know, who would create a story about that? So that's clearly a lie from Urban Meyer, right? Well, not necessarily, not according to Mary Jo White.
Despite Coach Meyer's clear awareness and monitoring in 2015 of the law enforcement investigation of Zach Smith for domestic violence, we ultimately did not conclude that Coach Meyer deliberately lied during his comments at Big Ten Media Days on July 24th, 2018.
What? What do you mean you didn't conclude that he lied at Big Ten Media Days? You just said that you found proof that he did know about 2015 and even tracked the situation for months. What do you mean he didn't lie? That he didn't deliberately lie? What, he just forgot? He just didn't remember? That's not possible. And to add on to this, to try and convince us that he did not, that perhaps he didn't remember the 2015 situation, in the written report that was released as well after the press conference, it says that Meyer sometimes takes a medication that can alter his memory and focus. Okay, so we're supposed to buy that he just somehow forgot that one of his assistant coaches was involved in a domestic violence situation, which, by the way, not for the first time. If you look back to 2009, when Zach Smith was arrested for domestic violence against his wife, Courtney Smith. So not only did he not remember 2015, if it were an isolated event, this has happened before. But yeah, let's be convinced that he just forgot. Two, you're going to create this side angle that, oh, he takes this medication, so maybe... maybe he just lost his focus at Media Days and just wasn't thinking clearly. That's bogus. We're supposed to be convinced that he can lose his focus and his memory at times, but he's one of the top coaches in college football? Get out of here. That's disgraceful. Let's hear the rest of that answer from Mary Jo White.
He has consistently maintained that he did not recall in July 2018 what he knew in 2015 regarding the domestic violence investigation of Zach Smith by law enforcement.
Okay, so you're just taking his word for it. Because Urban Meyer is clearly someone who always tells the truth and is trustworthy. Oh, he maintains that he didn't remember. Oh, let's just take his word for it. I mean, why not? I mean, he's got such a good track record, right? I mean, the guy only led the nation in player arrest during his time at Florida. The guy only gave Zach Smith a second chance after a 2009 domestic violence incident. The guy kept him on for three more years after he was accused of it again in 2015. Okay. let's just give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he didn't deliberately lie at Big Ten Media Days. I mean, apparently so, despite all the damning evidence. Let's just give him the benefit of the doubt. Absolutely incredible. The report also says, in the written report, and this is just even more damning, that how can you possibly believe that he didn't completely remember, wasn't aware of 2015, even though you said he was, but he didn't lie at Big Ten Media Days. The report also says that Urban Meyer, a week after, or sometime after Brett McMurphy's report came out on August 1st, when this all really got started, that he had conversations with the Ohio State Director of Football Operations, Brian Voltolini, discussing if he could delete texts that were older than a year, that were a year or older, trying to wipe his phone. He's trying to delete his past and cover his tracks, yet you're giving him the benefit of the doubt on Big Ten Media Days? Absolutely incredible. Incredible stuff from Mary Jo White. Urban Meyer read a written statement after Gene Smith talked. I'm going to skip over Gene Smith. To me, the focus is on Urban Meyer. I think that's what this has all been about from the jump, on how he handled everything with Zach Smith. He read a written statement for that, a couple of minutes, probably a 2-minute statement, where literally read the whole time, by the way, barely even looked up. Very disinterested. He apologized to to Buckeye Nation for the situation and for the fans having to deal with this, which is a joke. What are the fans having to deal with, right? I mean, good God. He even stumbled over some words when he was reading. I mean, just absolutely tone deaf at the whole situation. I do want to play this cut when mentioning Zach Smith. He said he probably could have done some things differently.
I followed my heart, not my head. I fell short in pursuing full information because at each juncture, I gave Zach Smith the benefit of the doubt. As I reflect my loyalty to his grandfather, Earl Bruce, who was my mentor and like a father to me, likely impacted how I treated Zach over the years. I did not know everything about Zach Smith, which was what Zach Smith was doing, and I'm pleased that the report made this very clear.
We're really supposed to believe that Urban Meyer didn't know what was going on with Zach Smith and didn't know Zach Smith well enough? He just told you that about his allegiance to Earl Bruce, who is Zach Smith's grandfather. He has known Zach Smith for a very long time and talks about wishing he knew more. And later, during the press conference when they were taking questions, he doubled down on this.
Most of what I know about Zach Smith is work-related. And I've, throughout my career, I've taken an approach when I see someone in distress or someone struggling, I seek to get counsel and help for that person. And the biggest regret, I wish I would know more. If I would know more, I would take action much quicker.
That's a joke. Him saying that he only knew him in a work environment. He's told us previously that him and his wife, Shelley, offered counsel in 2009 after the initial incident. Yet you only knew him in a workspace, only had a work relationship with him. Despite that, despite that his grandfather is Earl Bruce, your mentor, that you didn't have a personal relationship with Zach Smith. Very contradictory. I don't believe it. And neither should you. It's not true. Urban Meyer is showing us time and time again that he is a liar. He lied at Big Ten Media Days. He's lying about only having a work relationship with Zach Smith. If you only had a work relationship with Zach Smith and you find out about him being involved in domestic violence, then why do you keep him around? If you have no personal relationship or connection to the guy, then what are you doing? Don't believe it. I'm telling you, it's just not true. Urban Meyer continued to show disinterest during the question portion of this press conference. He was asked if he thought he should be suspended at all.
Do you feel that you should have been suspended?
I trust and support our president.
Look at his body language. If you haven't watched the press conference, just look at how disinterested he is. He doesn't think he should have been suspended, and the rumors all day were the reason it took 11 hours to deliberate before they had the press conferences. Urban Meyer was fighting with the president. I mean, not literally fighting, but basically disagreeing, saying he didn't think he should be suspended at all. And I think ultimately they said, look, man, you either take this suspension or we're going to fire you, which is ultimately what should have happened. I mean, right? I mean, just look, when you add all this up, how does Urban Meyer keep his job? He just doesn't care either. Listen to this. He was asked if he had a message for Courtney Smith. Take a listen to this answer.
What message do you have for Courtney Smith?
Well, I have a message for everyone involved in this. I'm sorry that we're in this situation. And, I'm just sorry we're in this situation.
You're sorry that we are in this situation? What exactly are you having to deal with? You've been sitting at home, I guess, wondering if you're going to have a job or not. You brought that on yourself. Courtney Smith is the victim here, not Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer is going to miss three Saturdays this fall. And on two of those Saturdays, he is going to be able to prep with his team throughout the week. He'll just miss those 3 to 4 hours on game day. That is not a punishment. And he is sitting up there arrogantly reading this written statement like he doesn't care, arrogantly answering questions like he doesn't want to be there and that he shouldn't be punished. Which, by the way, he wasn't. A 3-game suspension is not a punishment. That's not good enough. That is not good enough. The bare minimum, he should have been suspended for the entire season. And maybe the university looks into this more, and after a few months and 12 games, Urban Meyer can reflect, and maybe he can come back as your coach in 2019. But even then, that's probably not enough. But that should have been the bare minimum. The only conference game he's missing is Rutgers, the worst team in the Big Ten. Another game he's missing is Oregon State, the worst team in the Pac-12. And yeah, he won't be on the sideline against a pretty good TCU squad, but it's still a non-conference game. He's going to be there for the games that count this year. That's not a punishment. That's not good enough. Also, remember those texts that Brett McMurphy uncovered between Shelly Meyer, Urban's wife, and Courtney Smith, where she was informed by Courtney Smith about what Zach was doing to her? Urban says he wasn't aware.
What about Shelly's text messages? Why were you not concerned from her messages about this situation?
I was not aware of Shelly's text messages at the time.
That's a lie. I don't believe it. And you shouldn't either. Don't believe it. This is a pattern of behavior from Urban Meyer. Anybody that has followed Urban's career and is close to Urban at all, they all say the same thing. That Shelly Meyer is step for step alongside Urban. They are two peas in a pod. And we're supposed to believe that he wasn't aware of her texts with Courtney? It's not true. It is not true. Don't believe it. I don't. Incredible stuff coming out of Columbus, Ohio today. Some of my final thoughts. Again, 3 games is a joke. He's basically missing one pay cut from September 1st to September 16th. That's nothing. Again, the games he's missing, pretty insignificant. They'll beat Oregon State and Rutgers, no problem. They'll still be favored against TCU. Even if they lose to TCU, their season isn't lost. They can go win the Big Ten and play in the college football playoff. Not a suspension, or it is a suspension, but not a real punishment. I think that's a joke. If you're just going to give them 3 games, if you've determined that you're only going to suspend him 3 games, you might as well not suspend him at all. Some other thoughts. Think about this. Jim Tressel, and I've mentioned this before on a prior podcast, Jim Tressel ultimately was forced to resign because he covered up the fact that Ohio State players were getting things like tattoos and selling memorabilia. Seriously? That's like nothing compared to this. Urban Meyer, we have proof that Urban Meyer covered up a member on his coaching staff being involved in domestic violence on multiple occasions. Dez Bryant missed 10 games at Oklahoma State, I believe his junior year, before going pro because he hung out with Deion Sanders. Had dinner with Deion Sanders, which was an NCAA violation because Deion, I believe at the time, was involved with an agency. Dez Bryant missed 10 games. He didn't even know that was a violation. 10 games. Ohio State is suspending Urban Meyer 3 games. Todd Gurley got suspended 4 games for receiving $3,000 for signing footballs and stuff. He got 4 games. I look at this and you wonder if justice is served. It's not. And I know Zach Smith, he's the real criminal here. He's the real bad guy. And technically, he's not a criminal because he hadn't been charged with anything, which is a story in and of itself. And if you read some of the other details this week, Zach Smith has several issues. And it's not just the fact that he allegedly knocked his wife around. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google it. Trust me, there's pretty interesting stuff coming out surrounding that guy. Again, the main theme here is that Ohio State chose winning over doing what's right, which is crazy because they didn't do it before with Jim Tressel, a guy who was consistently winning 10, 11 games a year. And to Urban Meyer, this is the biggest thought of my night. He sat up there and acted like a victim, read a statement so arrogantly. I mean, I encourage all of you to go watch this. Just YouTube Ohio State press conference. It's the first thing that pops up. Look at his body language. He doesn't want to be there. He doesn't think he's done anything wrong. Barely acknowledges. I mean, I want to hear. Let's hear this one more time. Listen to what he said when asked about a message for Courtney Smith.
What message do you have for Courtney Smith?
Well, I have a message for everyone involved in this. I'm sorry that we're in this situation. And I'm just sorry we're in this situation.
I had to play it again because I can't believe it. You know that question's coming if you're Ohio State. How do you let him sit up there and answer it that way? It's tone deaf. Urban Meyer doesn't care. All he cares about is making a lot of money and coaching college football. And by the way, someone needs to go to the Meyer house, some journalist, Brett McMurphy, whoever, and talk to Shelly Meyer. I don't believe for a second he wasn't aware of the text. I would love to know what's going on inside that household, because I think it's one of two things. One, Shelly Meyer really doesn't care about what happened to Courtney Smith and doesn't think Urban or her or anyone else did anything wrong about not saying anything. Or two, Urban and perhaps other higher-ups at Ohio State have told Shelly to be quiet. Because how can she be supportive of Courtney Smith and what's going on with that situation, but also support Urban Meyer and A, not doing anything about it, and B, not showing any sympathy whatsoever tonight? Someone's got to talk to Shelly Meyer. And I'm not saying it's her responsibility to talk, but I really want to know what's going on in her head at this time. And last but not least, I feel for Courtney Smith and any other victims out there of domestic violence. I don't know the exact details and everything that happened to Courtney from Zach. I do know there's texts of him admitting that he strangled her. That much is clear. And we've all seen the photos. But if you're Courtney Smith and other victims out there, this is why people don't come forward. Because ultimately what happens? Doesn't look like Zach Smith is going to be punished. His only punishment is that he has a restraining order. He can't be within 500 feet of Courtney. That's not much of a punishment. Yeah, he lost his job 9 years after his first incident and 3 years after his second. If you're Courtney Smith, you're thinking, wow, I came forward, I did all this, and for what? Not much. My ex-husband lost his job, finally. And Urban Meyer, nothing's changing at Ohio State. Urban Meyer and all, they can all say how they're going to be careful moving forward and they're going to look at themselves and what they could have done differently. This is not enough of a punishment to do things differently. I'm very disappointed by this decision from Ohio State. I think it's wrong. I think they had an opportunity to do the right thing here, and they didn't. They chose winning over what's right, and that is extremely disappointing. This is the Four Verticals Podcast, Episode 5. I'm your host, Harrison Graham. Let's shift gears, talk about more on-field stuff. I want to preview the Texas Longhorns and the West Virginia Mountaineers. How good could West Virginia be? We preview both them and Texas next here on the Four Verticals podcast. Wrapping things up here on the Four Verticals podcast, I'm your host, Harrison Graham. Let's shift gears from the Ohio State press conference and announcement that Urban Meyer and Athletic Director Gene Smith will be suspended for the first three games of the suspension. Let's get the negative talk out of the way. Let's continue with our Big 12 preview series. We're going to get to West Virginia in just a moment. Let's start with the Texas Longhorns. All right, let's go down to the 40 acres and talk about the Texas Longhorns heading into this season. Head coach Tom Herman entering his second season after taking over for Charlie Strong a year ago. Mixed bag last year, 7-6 record, ended strong with a win over Missouri in the Texas Bowl. 29-10 record overall as a head coach is Herman. He, of course, went 22-4 during his time at Houston. Really came onto the map while guiding Ohio State's offense to the national championship back in 2014. Texas has 14 returning starters this season, 7 on offense, 7 on defense. Let's start with the offensive side of the ball. Kind of an up-and-down year for this group. 53rd in scoring offense at just under 30 points per game. 66th in total offense at just under 400 yards per game. The quarterback situation, well-documented. You got Sam Ehlinger and Shane Buechele. Tom Herman just named Ehlinger his starting quarterback in the last couple of days for the opener against Maryland. Up-and-down year for Ehlinger, 57.5% completion percentage a year ago, 1,915 yards, 11 touchdowns, 7 interceptions in his work in 2017. The problem with Sam a year ago was the catastrophic mistake. You saw it against Oklahoma State where he just flipped that ball in the end zone late in the game where Texas had a game-tying field goal in their back pocket, and it got picked off to cost him that one. He had the fumble in overtime against USC before falling to the Trojans. He threw an awful pick late against Texas Tech last year that really saved Cliff Kingsbury's job, a lot of people would argue. Gotta be smarter in those situations. Texas was really a couple of plays away from winning 8 or 9 games a year ago. A lot of that was due to Sam Ehlinger making the catastrophic error in critical moments. He's got to fix that as he heads into his sophomore season. I think he can do that, and if he can, he'll have his team in better positions to close out some ball games. Running back, look for a committee approach. You got the freshman Keontae Ingram getting a lot of hype. He might be the feature back this year. A 4-star recruit. I like what Tenille Carter and Daniel Young did a year ago. They'll be in the mix as well, especially in the pass game. Also, you add the senior grad transfer Trey Watson, give him some depth there. To me, they've got the bodies. They got to figure out how to run the football. You saw last year, Chris Warren couldn't even become a factor, and you're seeing what you're doing with the Raiders, what he's doing out in Oakland in preseason. You're wondering, how the hell could we not get this guy going a year ago? I'm looking at Tim Beck. I'm looking at Tom Herman. They got to step it up a notch, and Herman may have to get his head in there and eventually be the primary play caller. At receiver, I like what they have out there. Colin Johnson, Jordan Humphrey, a couple of big bodies on the outside. You got Devin Duvernay, a speedy slot guy. Got some depth as well. Veterans Gerard Hurd, the former quarterback, and John Burt. Those guys bring experience as well. So I like what they have at the skill players. Again, just looking at Tom Herman and Tim Beck in order to get these guys the ball in the right position. Offensive line, some experience was gained last year with several guys being injured, including Connor Williams, who's gone now playing with the Dallas Cowboys. Senior Elijah Rodriguez is back. He'll plug in at right guard. Senior Patrick Vahey, he's in at left guard. I like the addition they got from Rice, the grad transfer, Calvin Anderson, 36 starts. They needed a left tackle, and they get him and Anderson, so he should plug in and be the blocker on the blind side of Ehlinger. So even though they lose a couple of guys like Connor Williams to the NFL, Jake McMillan gone as well, I think with the experience gained last year, I think this group should be better, and I think Texas should be able to run the ball better. If not, really no excuse heading into year two. You got to run the football better than you did a year ago. Looking at the defensive side of the ball, 7 starters back, really good year under Todd Orlando, the defensive coordinator last year. 29th in scoring defense at just over 21 points a game. 41st in total defense at 365 yards per game. Looking at the front three in this 3-4 scheme, they do lose Puna Ford, who was an all Big 12 player a year ago, but they do have three seniors expected to start. Defensive ends Brecken Hager and Charles Menahue on the outside. Nose tackle Chris Nelson in the middle. Saw him at Big 12 Media Days. He's just going to stuff the run. Really big body there. Him and Hager representing the Longhorns out at Media Days last month. I like what they have up front there. That should be a solid group again. Linebacker depth is a concern. Malik Jefferson has obviously gone. DeMarvian Overshown and Aodele Adeoye out with injuries in spring and fall camp. They're going to be out for a while. Also, DeMarco Boyd's been suspended. Unsure what his status is going to be coming into this season. He had an off-the-field incident. The younger brother of Chris Boyd. The starters will probably be Gary Johnson, Malcolm Roach, and Anthony Wheeler. They all have experience, a couple of seniors and a junior. They should be fine. It's just the depth is what's concerning if one or two guys should go down on top of what they've already lost. You take a look at the secondary. Deshaun Elliott led the Big 12 in picks last year. He's gone. Rotation safety Jason Hall departs as well. John Bonney, Brandon Jones, projected starters there. Cornerback, a couple of seniors, and Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis. Then you got PJ Locke at nickel. My player to watch this year on this defense is Chris Boyd. It's a name we've known for a while, but a player that's really never fully reached his expectations. Can he put it all together in his senior season when he's expected to kind of be a veteran leader and a veteran player on the back end there after losing Elliott? I think Chris Boyd might be the guy to step up and really try and represent what Texas calls itself in DBU. So we will see if he is able to do that. I want to look at Texas's schedule here. To me, you got to start fast. You play at Maryland September 1st. With everything going on at Maryland, I'm not sure how motivated some of those players are with them losing their teammate, the coaching situation. There's no excuses. You have to go beat Maryland up in D.C. At FedEx Field. You got to get that thing done. No excuses. You got to go beat the Terps to open the year. Then you come home and play Tulsa, who's down, coming off a really bad season. Then the big one, USC in Austin. If you can beat Maryland, you beat Tulsa. Can you beat USC at home? Sam Darnold's gone. Ronald Jones is gone. They're replacing some key guys. That's a big opportunity for Texas. It's been a long time since Texas has gotten through the non-conference undefeated. Last year they lost two games. Can they get to 3-0? Because then the schedule continues to ramp up. TCU comes to town, who the Horns have struggled with since they've entered the conference. Then you go to Kansas State to wrap up September. I don't know if you're aware, Texas in Manhattan does not blend well. The Horns do not bode well every time they go up to K-State. So that's going to be a tough game. Then you got the Red River rivalry with Oklahoma Saturday, October 6th. Then Baylor comes to town before the bye week. Then you go to Stillwater. West Virginia comes to Austin. Then you go to Lubbock. Iowa State comes to Austin, and then you end the season at Kansas. You look at that last 3 weeks, at Texas Tech, Iowa State at home, at Kansas. I know two of those are on the road, but if you get through your first nine games, you got six or seven wins under your belt. If you're Texas, it's not a bad finish. The Red Raiders, Cyclones, and Jayhawks, that's not a bad way to finish the Big 12 schedule in a league that has a lot of parity, get a lot of the tough games out early and in the middle. That's why you got to start fast. You can't mess around with Maryland. Be nice to win a game over USC. Can you split TCU and Kansas State? You get to those last three games with seven wins, you're 7-2, 5-2 in the Big 12. You got a shot making that Big 12 title game if you're Tom Herman entering year two. Winning 8, 9, 10 games, it's not impossible, but really, the Maryland game is so huge. I mean, seriously, it may come down to beating the Terps. You beat the Terps, get some momentum going, all of a sudden you get a win over USC, get to 3-0. Things can change in a hurry, depending on what happens the opening Saturday up in Maryland. So those are some of my thoughts entering this season. Again, main points, got to get consistent quarterback play from Sam Ellinger. Got to be able to run the football, and you got to start fast. Got to win games early in the schedule. Can't mess around with Maryland. Got to take care of business there and get some momentum for Tom Herman. All right, next up, we've got West Virginia, the Mountaineers under head coach Dana Holgorsen entering his eighth season up in Morgantown. He's got a 53-37 record in his seven seasons of work. 7-6 last season, ended on a tough three-game losing streak with a 30-14 loss to Utah in the heart of Dallas Bowl. He's got 12 returning starters back on this year's squad, 7 on the offensive side, 5 on his defense. Let's start with the offensive side of the ball. Pretty good year last year, 22nd in scoring offense at 34.5 points per game, 20th in total offense at just under 460 yards per contest. Quarterback Will Grier, he's getting all the hype. He's the reason a lot of people have West Virginia as a trendy Big 12 pick to win the conference. Big season last year, 64.5% completion percentage, just under 3,500 yards, 34 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. Don't forget, had West Virginia off to a 7-3 start before getting injured against Texas. The Mountaineers were not the same after that, lost their final three games. Could have been a 9 or 10 win team if he had not gone down. At running back, this is the big hole on the offense. Got to replace Justin Crawford and his 1,200 yards of production from a year ago. Look at the trio of Alex Sinkfield, Martell Pettaway, and Kennedy McCoy to kind of do it by committee. McCoy had a 137-yard game against Oklahoma last year. He could be a guy that factors in there pretty well. Wide receivers, Grier not lacking a shortage of weapons. David Sills might be one of the best in the country. 60 catches, 980 yards, 18 touchdowns last season, almost a third of his catches ending up in 6 points. Gary Jennings, more of a receptions guy, 97 catches, just under 1,100 yards, just the lone touchdown down a year ago. Expect him to find his way into the end zone more often this season. Do lose Caron White, but the duo of Sills and Jennings might be one of the best tandems in all of college football, certainly in the Big 12 Conference. Like the offensive line, got 4 returning starters. Think they'll be better in that department coming into this season. My player to watch in this offense, obviously it's Will Grier. The Mountaineers have already launched their Heisman campaign. I want to see his interceptions total go down. He had 12 in just about 10.5 games last year. I want less than 1 per game. Can you get me into the 8 to 10 range over a 12, 13, 14 game schedule, depending on how long they play? He's going to push for 40 touchdowns, over 4,000 yards, should he stay healthy. He's the face of the conference when it comes to quarterbacks. There's no doubt about it. He can spin it, can make all the throws. I had him as clearly my top quarterback in the Big 12 in my power rankings. He's the full package, and if West Virginia is going to get to where they want to go, Will Grier is going to be a big reason why. I expect he will do his part. Defensive side of the ball, after a couple of really good seasons, really kind of changing the mold up in Morgantown. They took a step back last year. 90th in scoring defense at 31.5 points per game. Given up 106th in total defense, almost gave up 450 yards a contest. This is really what hurt him. 105th in turnover margin. I alluded to Grier and some of his turnovers. -7 as a team, just did not force many. Got to improve in that department. A lot of games in the Big 12, or you're not going to necessarily shut people down, but can you win the turnover battle? And West Virginia's got to do a better job of that this season. Defensive line, got a couple of big defensive ends, Ezekiel Rose and Reese Donahue, both 270 plus pounds. Then the nose guard, Darius Still, 6'1", 295. I think they'll be better this year, better at stopping the run, especially. They really got gashed last year. Even Kansas's Kenner, he had a big game against them a year ago. You got to stop the run first in this league and make teams one-dimensional. I think the linebackers will help them do that. 3 returning starters in David Long, Dylan Tonkery, and Draven Eskew-Henry combined for 153 tackles last year. That number should go up even more this year and help in the run game. Secondary, added a couple of transfers from the Big Ten, Josh Norwood to play safety from Ohio State, Keith Washington from Michigan at corner. West Virginia's had a lot of success with transfers. Expect those two guys to contribute. Cornerback Hakeem Bailey is probably the face of this secondary. 6 pass breakups last season. Expect him to tally a couple of picks this year. Safety Kenny Robinson, solid, 46 tackles last year, a few pass breakups. He should take another step as well. So I like that unit better. Look at stopping the run being key for these defensive numbers to improve. If you can't stop the run in the Big 12, you're going to have trouble in general because teams are going to throw it all over the yard. You got to force teams to be one-dimensional. West Virginia could not do that last year. If they can do that at a decent clip this year with the offense, with Will Grier, should be a pretty good group. I want to look at the schedule. A couple of tricky non-conference games. They play Tennessee to open the year in Charlotte in one of those kickoff games. Tennessee, we all know what happened with Butch Jones, really had a bad year last year, but they've got some talent. I wouldn't say that's a gimme by any stretch, especially it being a neutral site game. Tricky way to start the year. Then West Virginia comes home to Morgantown to play Youngstown State before an even trickier game. They go to North Carolina State out at Carter-Finley and Raleigh. NC State, 9-1 team a year ago, usually has some NFL talent. That's not going to be an easy game as well. So two Power 5 teams on the schedule in the non-conference. I like how the schedule plays out in the Big 12. You get Kansas State at home to open up Big 12 play, always a tricky opponent. I like that in Morgantown for West Virginia before going to Texas Tech and hosting Kansas the next couple of weeks. Then you go to Ames, Iowa before the bye week. That's a big game. That's probably West Virginia's toughest road game in the conference. Jack Trice will be rocking. Iowa State's a solid team. That could be kind of a swing game in the Big 12. West Virginia's got to be ready to rock as they. That's the sixth, the seventh game they play in consecutive weeks before hitting the bye week. After the bye week, you get Baylor at home. You go to Austin to take on Texas, and then look at the final three games: TCU at home, at Oklahoma State, Oklahoma at home. Again, though, the trio of Kansas State, TCU, and Oklahoma all at home might be three of the top five teams in the Big 12. That bodes well for West Virginia, especially finishing with Oklahoma. We may have that awkward situation that we've been wondering might happen as soon as the Big 12 started this Big 12 conference game. Could West Virginia and Oklahoma play 2 weeks in a row? A lot of teams have those two teams as the top two teams in the conference. They play in the final week of the regular season. It is a Friday, so it would give them an extra day to prep for that Big 12 championship game, but it's very well a possibility as those two duke it out at the end of the season. So I look at the non-conference schedule, got to take care of business against Tennessee and North Carolina State. You do that, get some momentum. They've got the firepower to beat anyone in the conference. West Virginia's kind of a trendy pick in the Big 12 by a lot of people. They have depth concerns. That's a little concerning to me. It's kind of been the theme with Dana Holgorsen and his tenure at West Virginia. Do they have enough depth over a 12, 13-game schedule? I think Will Grier and the offense can make up for a lot of that. We'll see if it's enough for West Virginia to finally break through in the Big 12 and challenge for the Big 12 Conference. That's my outlook on the Mountaineers coming into 2018. So there you have it. Those are some of my thoughts on the Mountaineers and the Longhorns coming into the 2018 season. I will save TCU, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma for next week's podcast. I'll also get into my college football playoff picks as it'll be the last pod before the real opening weekend of September 1st gets kicked off. So I'll give my college football playoff picks, bounce around the country, look at the Power 5 League, see how some of that will play out as well. So look forward to that coming up next week on the Four Verticals podcast. Final thought, as I always do when I sign off on the Four Verticals podcast, if you are ever in doubt, always go deep.